to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, North Bay, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. He's Mr. Weber on the board. We have Dow futures down 60. Everything was up last night. Heavier, but much more. Dow futures up like 100 and something last night. S&P still up 10. NASDAQ's up 121. As you can't stop the NASDAQ stocks. They're just, every one of those stocks, if you take five of them and extend out their prices for about 10 years, you'll find that they're the only, gonna be the only stocks left in the economy. It'll be like 2000 all over again. But Frank, how are you?
Good, good. And we have earnings this week.
Yeah, we have all kinds of them. And I am so happy that you survived the right-wing assassination attempt on you.
So am I. I was happy to survive the accident.
Yes, I mean, but there's no. The more I think about it, the more that there's no doubt that was a right-wing hit.
Well, it's going to. Navalny and I. Are you traveling with bodyguards now?
Yes. So who'd you hire? Would you go to some service?
They're anonymous.
Oh, all right. And the service name anonymous?
Yes.
Actually, there's big competition in that. Bodyguard services. And security services. Huge service. Huge competition in that.
Just talked to Eric Prince about that. That he divorced his brother.
Eric Prince? Why do I know that?
Blackwater.
Well, Well, I know some people who were, when they were putting their marijuana place together, one of the things you have to have is a security, right? And the original story was, our stupid state, they wanted 24-hour security in there even when you were closed. But I think they reneged from that. But I'm going to say there were, Sheriff's Department has a group. There's probably five or six places that are serious bidders for the job.
I know there's a number of policemen and ex-policemen I've known and know that have their own security companies.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think it's,
sometimes it seems like it may veer towards it being a protection racket.
Yeah. And,
It just potentially. I'm not accusing anybody on that. I just always found it a little off-putting.
You already did. Just saying. But when you see stuff that's happening, and one of the, well, she has never been a contributor to the show, but a friend of mine who deals in some of these larger financing sort of things. I don't know how successful she's been, but anyway, that's what she does. And I asked her, why don't you put together a group to factor receivables for the state? The state will only has like two firms they will allow your receivables to be factored. Now, when I start this story, I better explain it a little bit. Been in business since day one, basically. If you give somebody, what it used to be, Frank, when we were in school, it was like 230 and net 90 or something. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know what that means, Manny?
Huh.
Well, when you send somebody a bill, this is going back a ways. Say you did, you know, whatever, you know, huge plumbing contract for the guy, and he owed you $50,000. You'd send him a bill and you'd say, if you pay me within 30 days, you can take 2% off. So what was it, Frank? It was 230 net 90? Was that how?
It depended on the company, but a lot of them, I remembered specifically 230 net 90.
But then you were supposed to pay
sometimes
a 90.
Sometimes net 60.
Yeah, whatever. We do
net 30, net 45, net 60. All the time, but I've never heard of giving a discount if they pay early.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
Yeah, people always used to. So what they do a lot of times is if somebody didn't pay in the 30, you would run to your bank and say, we want the money, you know, because this guy's not going to pay for 90. Obviously, if he didn't pay in 30. We want the money, and the bank would charge like the 2% to give you your money on day 31 instead of 90. And that's known as factoring receivables, which I think most people at least have heard of. So you essentially, you'd rather give the 2% to your client than you would the bank, right? So anyway, but the problem there is that you have to now assign that receivable to the bank. So when a person sends a check in, it goes to the bank, not you. Well, the state only does that with like two firms. And they're like, shall we say, extremely politically connected. So it just
The kicker, Maddie. With the state, you get 10% a year when they can't pay a bill.
Right.
But the older doctors I know love that when it comes to state employee insurance. The younger doctors get squeezed on a cash flow. There's too many state employees. So they sell it. And only two people get to jump in on that 10% for the year deal.
And one of them is the guy who just got booted out of the house, speaker spot. Imagine that. Anyway, so yeah.
So is there a Republican person that gets to factor it?
No.
Oh, God.
I think the other one might have been an alderman in Chicago. I'm not positive on that, so I won't name it. But Madigan was one. So the idea is, so not only that, Maddie, so in other words, if you're big enough, and say you got enough equity, and you go to a bank, and the bank loans you a bunch of money at like 4 or 5%, which if you're big enough, they'll give you, or if you're politically connected enough, they'll give you, let's put it that way. The state now pays for stuff that is it over 90 days, Frank? They'll pay you 10% on the balance. So you don't care if they ever pay. I mean, if it's 3 years from now, then you get the money, and
you get 30%.
You get the 5% a year or whatever, or 6. So it's an amazing game. Are there people really making money on the fact the state doesn't pay? Yeah. But is it you or me? No.
Huge money.
See, man, you learn something every day when you hang here with us old farts, you know, that kind of thing.
Just another game that Tom and I are not allowed to participate in.
Yes. Even though we're as old white guys, we're supposed to be getting all the money if you listen to people today. So I want to know what will happen.
With Irish surnames to boot.
Yeah, with Irish surnames to boot. So I listen, on the way in this morning, evidently the president of Mexico, why does this truth in reporting is starting to get to me, or lack of truth. The president of Mexico tested positive for COVID, right? So, and he says he feels fine, all right, or he's very mild symptoms. They switched to some female, locking and loading about how many times the guy was seen without a mask, and just ripping into him. Now, I have a question for you guys, just a very simple question, yes or no answer. That if I were to pick up a group of 50 people in California that just got the COVID or any other place where it was a hot spot, and I were to say that 40 of them never were seen or heard without their mask, even in the can, would that make it to the radio? I'm thinking no.
Because those 40 people in and of themselves are not newsworthy.
Ah. But what if one of them was? What if it was you? You're newsworthy.
I'm hardly newsworthy.
Yeah, this morning.
Public hit attempt on me and nothing happens.
Well, that's right.
I am invincible.
Oh God! I have a question for you though, regarding this impeachment. Now Mitt Romney comes out and says the whole thing is constitutional to impeach somebody who's out of office. I don't know the answer. I mean, I'm sure if you read the Constitution, you'd have no idea what it said one way or the other. But like everything else, whether you're on the left,
I have a better idea than a lot of people do.
What's that?
Including people in government. But go on.
Well, my question is that Maddie and I, maybe unbeknownst to Mr. Weber, our state, I don't know if you'd moved in yet, Maddie, but our state senator had gotten booted. Now, what nefarious kind of dude you'd have to be to get booted out of the state governor of Illinois, I have no idea, but the guy got wung out of the
I camp. Have a theory that it's sort of like, remember when a drummer or a bass player got booted out of Guns N' Roses? Now, what did you have to do that?
That's exactly the same. You had to be Bogart in the joint.
it boggles the mind what you had to do to get kicked out of that band.
You had to intercept the drug delivery. Or something.
Maybe.
Something along
those lines. What do you have to do to get kicked out of the set? Well, you got to get caught on film. What did the mayor say?
Oh.
a dead hooker. I forget what it was. There was some Mayor Daly once said something like that.
I have a very quick Guns N' Roses disgusting story for you. Dr. J and I and this other guy went over, and this is like 1991. We went to Europe, and we were lecturing at a couple of great trip. I mean, met some really nice people. We did some lecturing on options. We did some options teaching, essentially, at Kreditanstalt in Austria, which is a great old place. We've got to talk about an old big bank building and huge boardroom where everybody, everywhere you sat down, Maddie, you had a button on the floor if you needed the butler to come give you, like, water or something. You just hit the button, and the guy showed up. It was pretty neat. Of course, on a Saturday, there was no butler. And then we went from there to Frankfurt, and we were at the former late, great Dresden Bank, which, of course, got bought up by Deutsche Bank. Of course, they all got to get bought up, right? And now Deutsche Bank's in trouble. Anyway, so we're taking the train from Vienna to Frankfurt, and the night before, there had been a Guns N' Roses concert. And I don't usually go into potty humor on the show, but if anybody's ever, you know, been to Europe in that era, the plumbing is not exactly as simple as it is here. Matter of fact, you wonder who the hell designed it. So if you go into the bathroom at the train station, there's like no urinals or anything like that. There's a wall, there's a concrete wall with a sheet of like a thin sheet of water running down the wall. And you walk up and you...
That's something we put in living rooms now, the waterfall.
Yeah, but you don't pee... the object is not to pee into it like it is there. And so you're standing there taking care of business, and all of a sudden these arms come over my shoulders. This is how bad it was. It was that crowded. And they're grabbing the water, and they're washing themselves with it, the people from the concert. And I'm thinking, I wonder if there's 100% recycle on this water. I'm thinking no, but that's just my hanging around with too many guys at Pullman, the new plumbing. I'm thinking, I'll bet this is not 100% recycle on this basically canned water. And that was everybody's shower. And I'm going, I don't want to be anywhere near these people on the train. Now, was that being?
I lived in Europe when they didn't bother to shower.
Well, that brings up another question, Mr. Weber. If everybody stinks, does anybody stink?
Good question.
No.
But I would bet you that if we walked into a bar in like 1875 in the Old West, we would be the people that smelled weird because we don't smell. I bet they'd think we were nuts. Anyway, so anyway, in Illinois, the deal was this guy got thrown out, and yet if he elected again, he's back in, and you couldn't wing him out the second time for the same thing you wing him out the first time for. So I'm questioning that if they boot Trump out, even though he's already out, how they extend that to where he can never run again. I mean, I don't know, Nixon, they stopped the impeachment process when he resigned. The last thing here's where I'm going with this. It may not be obvious to anybody. The last thing I want is any more discord in this country. I wish the Democrats would just lay off and start not acting.
You mean so the next Republican can come in and do it with impunity?
Do it even worse? Yeah. I mean, my point is, Frank, if the dude, I mean, I think they should just let him go away. The Democrats don't want to just let him die like the Republicans wouldn't let Hillary die. She was still the cause of everything for the next how many years? She'll be cause of everything 100 years from now. It'll be Hillary did it. But why not?
Come on, these babies, people think that Hillary eats dead babies. I'm dead serious.
Really? Oh, no, it's bad.
And Trump encouraged them.
Well,
something has to be done. You can't just let people do this with impunity, Democrat or Republican.
Agnes Louise
wouldn't have let it slide.
I would censure him severely. But what I'm going to, Frank, is if all of a sudden he wants to run again, which I can't imagine, but if all of a sudden the Democrats screw stuff up bad enough where he does, and he has 75 million and want him to run again, talk about a problem. I mean, that would be a real problem that the guy couldn't run again when it's just let it go. Censure him, say what an idiot he was, and let it go, and trust your population to not make the same mistake again.
But you can't.
Well, you
because
and I have.
There was a huge chunk that thought Obama was born in Kenya. He would have done that. There was a huge number of people that thought the Central Park Five were guilty of a crime they didn't, if you, because Donald Trump took out a full page ad.
By the way,
crime has to be stopped.
By the way, Frank, if you read Mein Kampf, you'll say Hitler was said that if you have a terrific big lie, if you do it right, that years later, even after the lie has been debunked by every science, I don't use the term science, because with science now you can pick up an article from anything, any historian, whatever, everything that what you said was wrong, 40% of the people will still believe it was true.
Well, so, it's the whole matter of real versus imagined. When I went to grad school at Northwestern, I was working on a PhD in deviant behavior. And it comes down to what do you define as deviant.
Why does that not surprise me?
It matters how people react to the information, not whether it's true or not.
Who are the people you're using for examples? Anybody on the show?
Anybody on the show?
Were you using your examples as deviants?
No, I wouldn't do that. This was sociology, so we're talking masses of people, like 74 million.
Oh, all right.
You know, or 80 million. But the whole thing is it doesn't matter if something's a lie, you know, Hillary eats dead babies. It's how people react to it that determine the behavior.
Well, part of it is you
real
get to
live versus imagined.
I'm just saying, let's. The last thing you want to do if you're criticizing the people before you is do the same thing they did. Just go on and do the job right and do what you're supposed to do and censure the dude, and that's it. Just go. The guy's going to be sued and everything else by everybody. He might be in jail by then. Don't worry about it. He's gone. He's like Hillary. He's gone. Maybe you don't agree with me either.
Well, I think we have to see what happened when he was trying to get rid of the head of the FBI and was, or Department of Justice, and was going to appoint his own dude.
I actually don't have an opinion.
I mean,
on
that matter is scary. That level of
Frank, there is. I can list you 10 very serious problems in this country, and he's not one of them right now. He's gone. I want to work on the 10. It doesn't make me like him. I never did. It doesn't make me want somebody like him there again. I don't want one. But it's not. He's not my top 10, and every day he drops further off.
I personally admit I haven't Googled Trump in the news for a while.
Well, he's down in Mar-a-Lago, where everybody's quitting the club. Well, matter of fact, saw my buddies from Notre Dame last night, and one of our friends has a spot right near him, and he's kind of right wing, and they go, "Hey, they might be over at Trump's for dinner. Nobody else will go." I hope that isn't true, but I bet Mar-a-Lago is kind of lonely if you're there by yourself. It's kind of a big place. Who was that? Was that the Hunts? Was the Heinz ketchup? Was it one of the ketchup's guys? Right. The ketchup lady that gave it to the U.S.?
Marjorie Merriweather Post owned it.
Cereal. It was Post Cereal, and it wasn't the ketchup people.
Right.
Okay. So, Frank, all right, now we've got, obviously, the market. We've got the Fed. We've got money that seem to be pouring in. I don't think that he's going to get, is this $15... You never really know what the politics is. I'm going to say that the $15 thing goes the way to Dodo Bird, and that gets negotiated out. I think a lot of stuff.
I think you're going to have to define who gets 15. Number one, it has to be attached to some sort of cost of living index. If you're going to do that, but then we know how cost of living indexes can be manipulated, or any index can be manipulated.
Well, all day Friday on CNBC, all he did was talk about the minimum wage. And, of course, people sniveling about governments, corporations can't pay it and this can't pay it. And I'm gonna go back to my the economic argument, and you guys can both shoot at me here, but the economic argument is your wages, there's a supply and demand for workers. Just like anything else, just like it's corn, just like it's booze, whatever it is, and where those two lines meet at any level, that's what the wage is, and it's the market.
Well, the difference is the country, our government, has no responsibility to corn. It does have a certain amount of responsibility for its citizens.
Well, what I'm saying,
I don't reduce humans to just being chattel.
I didn't say that. What I'm saying is there's an economic... Now, if you wanted me to go off on a huge tangent about why that rate is so low, I could go into offshoring, those kinds of things, where you increase the supply more than it should be. Because what Roosevelt did is, you know, you go back and you say, okay, when he came into office, you had kids working under age 16, right? You had all kinds of issues. And so when you say you can't have child labor anymore, it's very altruistic to say that, but also means that you've removed a chunk of people from the workforce, right? So you've decreased the supply, which means that the prevailing wage now goes up, correct? I mean, that's really what you do. There's an economic argument to all this. What I'm saying about the minimum wage, if that number lands at $10 an hour, say, just to be even, and the minimum wage is $8, then you can walk out and you can put your big bazoo mouth on like every politician does and tromp around the country, and you're going to raise the minimum wage to $9.50, and you're going to take all this credit and everybody's going to cheer for you. You haven't done squat, okay, because the rate's already $10. So all you did was take a number that was ridiculously in the hole and put a little less in the hole. Now, can you take that even further and say the economic number is 10? Now, granted, I'd find a way, like Carl says, I'd find a way to have tariffs on countries that use slave labor and say, you know, whatever, do some way to increase or decrease the supply on this end or increase the demand. That's what I would do. But there's no way on earth you can walk in and say, okay, I'm going to make the minimum wage 20 when the economic rate is 10. You just screw the whole system up. There's no way you can do that. People find ways to get around it. They won't pay people to do something to be off books. You can't fight the economics of it, I don't think, Frank. I really don't. So 15, I think, is too high. So what they're going to end up doing is they'll negotiate down to like 9.75, which is below the going rate anyway. Or they'll just take it off totally just because that's the one thing he'll go up on or something. Am I right or not? There's no way you can have a minimum wage that's double the economic wage and not screw everything up.
Follow the money.
Yeah. So the question...
And we also then have to follow the lobbyists.
Well, it's always... I mean, why aren't we lobbyists?
I'll tell you, a very strong lobby in this state. Tow truck operators.
Oh, God, yeah.
So I could put in an ambulance on Wednesday, take them to the... a hospital. The policeman's supposed to get my keys. I said, I need my keys. They're in the car because my car's totaled. I go. They don't have my keys. I have to go to the towing place. I show them. My wife shows them our insurance card and her license that shows that she's on the insurance card. They wouldn't give it to me. They wanted to see the policy. According to the state of Illinois, they can do that, number one. Number two, all they have to do is give you prescription drugs or your prescription glasses. My keys were hanging in the garage, house key, other car keys, of a towing company. I mean, I asked the police chief about this, and he goes, yeah, they have a good lobbyist. Like, they're probably as good as the currency exchanges.
Well, the towing contracts, there used to be people. My uncle was a vice cop for the county before he got canned because Ogilvy was elected, and he was Republican, and my uncle was a Democrat. So that's what used to happen back in the day before you had, like, civil service and stuff. But he knew all the mafia guys because he was busting half of them. Then all of a sudden he's not a cop anymore and he moves out to Chicago Heights and he knows all these guys, right? So he was like, the guy in Crime Story where, you know, you're either on one side or the other. He's having breakfast with everybody and it's all the guys. I could name the names, but I won't. But all of a sudden there's an election out there and there's people getting shot. It's like, oh, hey, Unc, what the hell's going on? He goes, oh, this is, if the new guys get in, they're going to change all the towing contracts. And Chicago Heights is right, it straddles It's not straddled, but it's right near I-80 and it's in I-57. So the people there, a highway towing contract is worth a boatload. A boatload.
It's not even a contract. They just get to be preferred vendors. So there's a crash, they call, and won't say the name of the company, but they call this their preferred towing company. And the police cannot have a contract with them saying, hey, you got to give people your keys if you're going to tow in our municipality. Well, you have to give them their briefcase.
I'm going to say that most cars that go in there, probably a lot of them never come out. So if you're going to sell them, you want the keys.
They're too bad.
Well, Dr. J,
my wife says that a huge chunk of replacement licenses they shoot hands out at the DMV is people whose cars have been towed with everything they own in it. No ID at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Because that's why they give you the inventory thing when you leave. You know, the cigarette lighter's still there, those kinds of things, because stuff disappeared. So get a load of this. We lived on the south side, right? Dr. J and I and a guy who still works here at PTI, his big house in Beverly, which I own, and those guys piled in. And we had a great time. We had all these cars, right? So all of a sudden, I sell the house, and John moves up to the north side, and he's living, pretty much where I live now. But now, of course, it's a lot nicer than then. But they had one of these things where they were doing something with the street, and they moved his car to another spot, right? So John, of course, never checks the thing. He goes out of town or where the hell he went. So then, like a month later, he's still got Minnesota plates on him because who knows why. His mother gets a thing in the mail up in Minnesota saying that they had crushed his car. Right? They towed it away. It says he didn't show up and get it. And I mean, name me anybody else who wouldn't even look for his car in like 30 or 60 days. But so they tell him he crushed it. Now, this thing is a 2-year-old Firebird with a 5-speed Hurst and T-tops. It's a beautiful little car. You mean to tell me there isn't a towing car guy or a policeman driving around in that car till this day? There's no way on earth they crushed that car. Just saying. How you retitle it, how you do all that stuff, what do you get one of those?
Well, that was before Jesse White became head of the Secretary of State, everybody could drive by a commercial driving license.
Yeah, well, what was, what's his name, the governor? That's why he went to jail. Was when he was Secretary of State, you could buy the commercial drive, and then the one person got, or two people got killed, right? Or the family got killed.
Up in Milwaukee.
Yeah. Ugh. Anyway, Frank, so what do you think this week? We got all these earnings. Are we going to be up or down on the weekend? What about bonds?
Well, I don't know about bonds, but we have Amazon on the 2nd. So if we start getting good earnings from somebody like Amazon blows it away, you know, or Apple, which is tomorrow.
Yeah, we're all kinds of nerd.
I mean, so one bad earning from these companies will be a kick in the knee.
Really?
But I think we're just in the trading range. 4,000 wouldn't surprise me at all on the S&P 500.
No, it's not that far away, actually. All right, Frank, thank you. Talk to you later.
I'm still a bear.
Oh, yes. Talk to you later in the week, but S&P futures up 6. Yes. NASDAQ futures up 128. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Dr. Jackson. I'm Tom Alley. Just brought over on the board. S&P futures up 8. They were up 10 when we came in. They were up like 16 last night. NASDAQ futures up 129. They're still strong. That's 1%. Dow down 70. We've got Apple up 363. Just got to keep buying Apple. We've got to keep buying all the same stocks, same stuff. They're just going to keep making more and more and more. And, you know, maybe they're right. Maybe they're right. It's just generally whenever things get this narrow. Although, I will say this. I'm criticizing myself here again, Manny. It's narrow in the stocks that we follow and the indexes, but it's not narrow if you look at some of the stocks that have come out in the last year. They're all of a sudden have just really charged up. So if you include them, they're moving as much as some of the ones that we always talk about. Anyway, so let's say over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 102. That's 0.7%. They were up a bunch last week. FTSE down 43.6%. CAC around down 42.8. So they're generally bearish today. The difference is we're up. Nikkei up 190.7%, which is about what it was down on Friday. Shanghai up 17.5%. Hang Seng up 7.11, 2.4%. Hang Seng has been all over the place, and now recently has turned pretty bullish. I'm not sure why that is, but it is. Just as a way of review, Dow was down 179 on Friday. S&P was down 11. NASDAQ, however, was up 12. Bonds, we've got the bonds down this morning, or 10-year yield, 1.07. It's down almost 2 basis points. One minus 0.54 in Japan, same spot, minus or positive 0.04. We've got oil up a dime, 52.37. Brent up a dime, 55.51. Natural gas up 7 at 2.52. And RBOB up 1 cent, 1.56. Manny, everything jumped 20 cents in gas out, even in the burbs. 2.53 last week was like 2.35. So I don't know what caused that. But gold up 5.90, 18.62. Silver up 11 cents, 25.67. Copper unchanged, 362. Platinum up 830, 1119. What do you got for Stravic Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have an issue on the inbound Kennedy at Montrose. The entrance ramp is closed if you're getting on the Kennedy at Montrose. Looks like due to some sort of construction. You'll have to... Actually, it looks like maybe due to police activity. It's also rerouting northbound Cicero and eastbound Irving Park buses are temporarily being rerouted due to some police activity that's happening this morning up in that area. And it's also affecting that Montrose entrance ramp to the Kennedy. So keep that in mind if you're in that area. No issues on the Edens. No traffic delays on the Kennedy, by the way. Eisenhower looking good. Stevenson all quiet. Southside expressways are looking good as well. Out in the western suburbs, the Tri-State southbound, just before 47th Street, there's a crash blocking the left lane. So that's causing some congestion and stop-and-go traffic there. That's our slowest moving expressway at this hour. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be cloudy and right around freezing for most of the day. And then we're expecting a winter weather advisory to come into effect around 4 p.m. this afternoon and then last for about 24 hours as we're supposed to get our first real heavy winter storm of the season beginning this afternoon. And again, lasting all through the night and into tomorrow. Could be anywhere from 5 to 8 inches of snow accumulated in the area, and we're expecting 35 to 40 mile per hour winds as well to go along with it. So not good for traveling. So if you are going into an office today, you might want to duck out early because it's going to start around 4 p.m. it looks like, and it's not going to let up until well into Tuesday. So keep that in mind. Right now it is cloudy and dry and 31, going up to a snowy high of 34. For our Phoenix listeners, storms in the area today and a high of 53. Right now it is partly cloudy and 47. In sports, it was a busy championship Sunday yesterday. Of course, the two games in the NFL, but we also had hockey and college hoops. We'll start with the NFL, and Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers made history, becoming the first team to host, to make it to the Super Bowl when they're the home team playing in their home stadium, as they upset Green Bay on the road yesterday, 31-26 to advance to the Super Bowl. First time for that organization since John Gruden's Buccaneers won it all back in, what was that, 2001, 2002, something like that. So they'll take on the Chiefs, who fell behind 9-0 to the Bills early and then really took it to Buffalo, who could not stop Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs at all. They won that game 38-24, and they will be favored against Tom Brady and the Buccaneers here in 2 weeks. In hockey, the Blackhawks blew out Detroit 6-2. Coyotes lost to the Vegas Golden Knights 1-0. College hoops, Loyola had no issue with Bradley, winning 65-56. Notre Dame won on the road at Miami 73-59.
Gee. Well, how did that happen?
Miami's not very good, and I think one of their best players might be out injured, or at least he was earlier in the year. I didn't see the game yesterday, but Notre Dame led wire to wire in that one.
Some very curious decisions yesterday. Any particular reason why those guys didn't go for the kick, the one point, extra point in the game, in the second game that Tony Romo was complaining about? They were down.
They had a chance to cut it to 16, right? Or
yeah,
is that what it was?
Yeah,
yeah. I watched the whole first game and I saw the first half of the second game, and then it was apparent the Chiefs were going to run away with that one. So I and Jill was happy to not watch our seventh straight hour of football. So
So what'd you watch instead? There was nothing else then.
Well, we have different series that we watch, but
oh god.
But I did see some tweets about it, and that was the issue, right? They could have just kicked the extra point and cut it to 16, but yeah, they went for two, and then now they're down 17.
Yeah,
yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me.
No, and the other game, why they didn't? I mean, first of all, Rodgers didn't run when he had some room. He'd have made it in the inside the five anyway.
He at least makes your decision of going for it much easier because he's probably at the, you know, like you said, the 3 or 4 yard line. But he also had the opportunity to make one guy miss and score a touchdown. I mean,
yeah. Well, yeah.
And instead, he, you know, throws across his body and chucks one out of the back of the end zone that really had no chance. And now it's 4th and goal from the 8 with just over 2 minutes to go. And because they had all 3 timeouts, LaFleur decides to kick the field goal, cut it to 5, and then hope that your defense can force a 3 and out, use your timeouts, and get the ball back. And now you don't need a 2-point conversion or anything.
I just thought that was a horrendous decision.
I did too, at the time.
At the time, yeah.
I thought it was at the time, and I still think it was. I don't take the ball out of Rodgers' hands. He is your best chance of winning, not your defense forcing a 3 and out. And sure enough, Tampa Bay gets a couple of first downs, and it's game over, and Rodgers never gets the ball back.
The refereeing was very suspect. The play that really screwed it for the they finally called the pass interference in the Buffalo guy. But they'd been hand checking. There wasn't a pass interference call the whole game. The guys were just hand checking and pushing and holding and everything, and all of a sudden there was on like the key play, which I thought was incredible, but it was. It might have been the other game. They were kind of a blur, but anyway, so, Jan, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
Doing all right, but we lost some people last week, huh? Hank Aaron, what's his name? The talk show host, King?
Oh, Larry King.
Larry King. I hope there's not a big to-do about Henry Aaron taking the virus shot 2 weeks ago, huh?
Yeah, it was about 17 days after he took the vaccine, he died. So.
After, we're of course not getting the scoop on this because this thing is causing more problems than the flu shot, but I don't think anybody's, well, no, allegedly nobody's died from it yet, but anyway, he...
I have a bunch of friends that have already taken it.
How did they get it?
Well, one is a Chicago public school teacher.
Okay.
One is a healthcare person. And then the other one is the husband of the healthcare person, and they basically said, hey, we have a bunch of doses that we don't want to throw out. Like, get your significant others in here. And they did, and so he got one.
Good for him. I mean, down in New York, they would have thrown him out. they have.
I know, which is insane. Yeah. I think they reversed course on that, but that was insane.
I'm going to cause some problems here today. I'm going to say you have your chance to fire all these teachers today.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Tom. The vote that the union took was only 71% in favor of staying out, which is a huge embarrassment for the union leadership and, you know, for going to the mat on this issue. So I think there might be some kind of you know, tipping in the other direction if things continue this way. They're getting some pretty bad press about this.
Yeah, hey, we have our buddy Kevin calling in. I thought we needed... a little more on Hank Aaron, because it wasn't just a baseball player. All this stuff about
Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Hi, John. Good morning. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, listeners.
Hey, I searched because I'm so bad at it. And I've seen this in a couple of establishments, shall we say bars. There's an iconic picture, and I think they might have it over at Barney Anthony's. I'm not sure. There's an iconic picture of the... I think it might have been the 55 All-Star game with a very young Hank Aaron, Ernie Banks, Willie Mays, and I think Jackie Robinson was in the picture too. I can't remember if it was three or four. And then the caption was something like, not a bad nucleus or something like
that. Oh, not a bad nucleus. do you know that the Giants actually had a contract offer out to Henry Aaron? He could have joined Willie Mays. For the duration of his career, but
well, then where would they put him?
Then Milwaukee Braves offered him about $50 more a month, so he signed with the Milwaukee Braves.
But then, where would they have done with Orlando Cepeda?
Who, the Giants?
Yeah,
Cepeda was a first baseman.
He played left field for the first part of his career, I think.
He might have when Willie McCovey. He was opposite Willie McCovey, wasn't he?
Yeah, and when McCovey...
Who came first, McCovey or Cepeda? I don't remember.
I think they were together for a while, but...
Yeah, and then when the Giants decided they couldn't use them both, then the Cardinals got Cepeda.
Yeah. But the... did Hank Aaron, did he go to the minor leagues?
Good question, and I don't know the answer. Did he come straight out of the Negro League?
Because Banks came straight from Kansas City. And his big bitch when he got to the Cubs was... All he did was lose, and there were people in Kansas City who were better than some of the stiffs that the Cubs had. Imagine that.
Yeah, sign them all. Yeah, sign the whole darn team, and the Cubs would be good.
And were some of the other guys?
Apparently, Hank Aaron played for the Jacksonville Braves Class A minor league team in 1953.
See, I'll bet he had some issues there.
Jacksonville was probably not an ideal place to be for a young black man at the time.
I think that, I don't know the whole particulars, but I would bet, I think Jackie Robinson spent a year in the minors, but wasn't he in Toronto? Which was obviously a lot. Something like that?
Montreal.
They've made it, Canada has always been a little better on this stuff than we were. Maybe a lot better. And the, Ernie Banks I know came straight. I don't know, did Willie Mays play in the minors?
I am sure he played in the minors, and he actually got sent down for a little while after his first
really
stint in the majors.
Because I don't know, I mean, it was how many years later,
or maybe I'm thinking Mickey Mantle for that. I don't, you know, it's
Well, I know that Roberto Clemente had...
It's Monday morning, and I'm old and feeble-minded.
Well, Roberto Clemente was... How many years later would you say, Matty? 7 or 8?
Right.
And he had problems in southern Florida. I don't think he could stay in the same hotel as the rest of the team and all that stuff. And
Willie Mays played in Birmingham in 48, and then in Trenton in 50, and then he called up to New York in 51, and then back to Minneapolis in 51, and then back to New York for good in 52.
He probably was still really young.
Yeah, so he bounced back a couple of times in his first 3 years, and then he was in the big leagues from 52 on.
Because I seem to remember Ransano, who was from Seattle, and he, most people, you never even expect anything like this, anybody normal, that he said when he got to wherever the Cubs minor league team was, they'd take the bus, and he and Billy Williams were on the same team. So had to be, they both came in like, was Billy Williams rookie of the year 63 or 62, somewhere in there. And he said they would drop Billy off at somebody's house if they're playing in the South because he couldn't stay in a hotel. And Sano's like, why are you dropping him off here? The hotel's over there. Oh, he can't stay in a hotel. Which is amazing when you think it's, I mean, if you're young, it's a long time ago. If you're old, it's not that long ago when you start thinking.
The Cardinals solved that problem because Gussie Bush didn't like it that his players couldn't stay in a hotel when they were at spring training in Florida. So he bought the hotel.
That'll work.
And and then everybody stayed there, including families, and it made them a much closer team. Much more, and they got on a much faster track to racial harmony amongst the team than anybody else, because it wasn't just that all the players stayed at the hotel; it also meant their families, their wives, the kids played together. All of the normal neighborhood things that you do happened at spring training for the Cardinals.
Smart move.
Yeah. Well, somebody asked when we were having an adult beverage. What team was the we were talking about the subject with Jackie Robinson, and somebody said, "What was the last team to have an African American player on it?" Without even knowing, I just said it had to be Boston, and it was.
Yeah, do you know who it was?
That I don't know.
It was Pumpsy Green.
I would never. Who the hell's Pumpsy Green?
You don't even remember the name? Come on, I remember the name. Baseball card when I was a kid.
Oh God, but. So the order
and because his name was Pumpsy Green, that's one you'd remember.
Yeah. So the order was Jackie Robinson and Larry Doby was second, right?
Yeah.
I can't remember who was. Was he one of the top 10? He must have been. Nah, maybe not, because he was 52. He was the first Cub for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It was Minnie Minoso. Actually, the Sox were pretty aggressive. I think Al Smith and Minnie Minoso might have been before Banks.
Yeah, it may have been. Anyway, let's circle back on Aaron because he's such an interesting guy. The obligatory how great a baseball player he was. Everybody knows the 755, but he was consistent. He went like 15. I think I wrote it down 15 times in 17 years. He was in the 30s and 40s in home runs. So he never hit more than 47, but. But he almost always was in the 30s and 40s, and I think the two times he fell short, he lost about 3 weeks to injury, and so he only had 24, and then the other year he fell short was 68 when he had 29. Otherwise, it would have been one more year in the 30s. At the time, batting average was everything, so if you were a career 300 hitter, you were something. Now, as we get into the advanced metrics, and that's all been recalculated, his career on-base percentage, 374. So he was an on-base guy. His career OPS, 928. His career WAR, 143. So, he's just all of these statistics that he piled up. If he had never hit... home run. He still would have had 3,000 hits if you took out all his home runs, he still had 3,000.
Well, that's the thing.
That's amazing.
Even if people, even in the day when he was getting close to Ruth's record, the nasty people would say he really wasn't a home run hitter. He just lasted a long time, which actually is true. He just was a terrific hitter, terrific player that had enough power to get him 40 home runs a year and lasted a long time. And he was
here's the thing is most hitters will tell you that they sit on the fastball and adjust to the curve. And Aaron was the other way around. He'd sit on the curve and adjust to the fastball because his swing was so quick and his wrists were so good that he didn't believe anybody'd ever get a fastball by him, and he was right. And in fact, the great quote was from Joe Adcock, who said that trying to get a fastball past Henry Aaron is like trying to sneak the sunrise past a rooster.
Well, I remember Billy Williams saying that his swing was a little quicker than just about everybody's, which meant he could wait just that fraction of a second longer and catch where the ball was going a little better than the next guy. So there's always a little bit of an advantage when you have that kind of quickness and you have that kind of eye. I mean, and Banks also said that he could tell the spin on the ball by the time it left the pitcher's hands like 5 feet, whether it was spinning or not. That's pretty incredible.
If you have that kind of eyesight, that's a tremendous advantage. But you're right. If you have that quickness, it's short and sweet, then you can still hit the ball out of the park. It may not, for Cubs fans who would of course understand this, it may not go on the Waveland Avenue, but who cares? There's no extra points for the ball going any farther than the first row.
Well, my uncle was always added. Banks hits those line drive home runs. They were essentially gappers that he had enough power to leave the place. I mean, he was not a Dave Kingman or anybody like that. I mean, we didn't want to be, right? I always thought that the guy that would be a home run hitter like Aaron, if he didn't play in such a cavernous spot, would have been Clemente. I mean, he would have easily been 440 a year if he was in a regular place. He wouldn't have been 60 or anything like that, but he would have been, he didn't last as long. Obviously, he died, but, I mean, he would have been, if he didn't play in Forbes Field, he had enough power to be a 35, 40-year guy.
Sure, he probably, I'd have to go look it up, but I think Clemente was in the 200, the high 200s.
Yeah.
And he probably, he could have maybe in another ballpark been a 400 home run guy.
Because he played most of his career in Forbes Field, right?
Yeah.
Maybe, I think it was.
And then some at Three Rivers.
Yeah, when he won the World Series, he was at Three Rivers. But they've been I think, Manny, if you could dig up, I'm going to say Forbes Field was 400 down the lines. Wasn't it damn close?
Oh, and it was something like, 450 or 60 in the left field gap.
Yeah, it was
so far out there that, the lights didn't really reach it very well.
Yeah.
So if you were watching a night game in Forbes Field on TV and someone hit one in the gap that rolled to the wall, you actually kind of lost track of everything until somebody emerged from the darkness.
God. Well, some of those I remember the lights at Old Comiskey were pretty. No, talking about switching around. Some of the letters that were written to Hank Aaron were like, come on, really? Hey, N-word, we don't want you, I mean, it's just how brutal can people be? God,
and the pressure that created, the death threats, everything else, and then and yet his perseverance through all of that, and while he was outspoken on racial issues, he never came off as angry.
No,
he always came off as forceful. Instead, just an incredible presence. And I'll give you, before I get out of here and yield time back to my esteemed colleague from the north side, even though he's originally from the south side, here's another interesting story. He and his wife lost a child, I believe it was in childbirth when he was in Milwaukee. As part of that process, he wound up converting to Catholicism.
Really good for him.
And then later converted to Baptism, or Baptist, the Baptist faith.
Oh, God.
So, but he was, you know, that that was an essential part of his life, in that he was a guy who was searching, you know, searching for the meaning that that he always felt faith could provide, and that was triggered by crisis, and he, you know, he did that, and you know, that that's an, another interesting aspect of the man that I don't think a lot of people realize, is that that there was a very spiritual aspect to his life.
Well, the fact that these people had to go through this kind of stuff is, you know, it, it obviously was very bad for them. But, it, you know, things were pretty brutal. That's earlier in the 1800s for anybody. Anybody didn't like anybody who wasn't like them. The Irish couldn't go places. The Jewish didn't do so hot either. I mean, it was pretty... The blacks for sure had it worse, but other people got it pretty bad, too. I mean, it was just an awful time to be alive. I mean, it just... We're so much better off now that we, I think most people think, what difference does it make what somebody looks like or where they're from? I mean, it...
Well, yeah, I think the point of this, Tom, and I'll leave you guys, you can discuss it however you want, but is... you know, there's an empathetic view that I think we all need to take, that other people who are you know, different, who are, you know, different as society defines different in so many ways, experience a lot of things differently than you and I do.
Oh yeah.
And whether it's policing, whether it's you know, whether it's school and teachers, whether it, you know, I mean, it's a lot of things, and there's a whole different experience to, and it's really hard to relate to. So I think, you know, the big thing, and this circles back to, you know, what it was like to be a ball player in the 50s and 60s, a black ball player in the 50s and 60s, is, you know, we just need to understand that it's different. You know, I have no way of really fully understanding what it was like. What I can do is I can understand that it's different, and that there's going to be a whole point of view that comes with that. And, you know, I think Aaron throughout his life, just like Jackie Robinson did, you know, became an advocate, you know, based on that experience, and really was a powerful force of change.
Well, I think, again, this is not detracting from anything you just said, because it's not, I hope I'm adding to it. A lot of that, I mean, it's clearly racial, right? Anybody, a lot of people just don't like anybody who's not like them. But it also is economic. I mean, there's an awful lot of poor white areas in the country where the difference is not that much. I mean, obviously, if you can break your way out of there, then I guess you look the same as the other people in power back. It used to be in power, but it probably was just as hard to break out of, you know, West Virginia and some of those areas. I mean, The schools were just as lousy, you know. Clearly in some of the shanty towns in the, if you're working on the I&M Canal and you're an Irish guy and it's 1835, what's your life expectancy? A month? You know, Hank Aaron, he was always one of my favorites. Absolutely. I got to see him play a couple times. Saw Clemente play about 10 times. He's always saw the Pirates for whatever reason, but. Again, he will be
broke
missed.
The record. I remember. I think I was probably watching the game with you, Kevin, and probably your brother Tim and Tom and Bob and a whole bunch of people. I don't know if we saw it live or not, but I certainly remember the coverage that day when he broke this record in April '74. And that's one of my more vivid memories of college, really.
Oh, it was a great day. Anyway,
how frightening, Kevin. Do you think it was when those two guys came out of the stands? They came out to congratulate him.
Not as frightening
after
as today.
All the threats he had. Yeah. You know, what do you suppose the first reaction was?
I don't know, but hopefully not as frightening as today, where who knows what they'd be carrying.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, Kevin, thank you much, buddy. SP Futures up 350. NASDAQ Futures up 124. NASDAQ's getting higher, the rest of them are going lower. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Matt Weber on the board. We have Sir John Flanagan with us. I have two things, believe it or not, here that I want to cover here, John. And I would love Maddie to be involved in this because first one is we got to keep going on our teachers union stuff. Nobody is a more union friendly guy than me. I think that the idea of not having a group of people to talk to somebody when somebody you're talking to is as big as Amazon is a little crazy. And why you shouldn't have the same sort of, you know, support when you're talking about a contract or things. I mean, I think that's nuts. Having said that, I think some of these, the unions have gone way too far, and it's public employee unions where essentially you vote the person in who's going to be the, I think somehow there's something intuitively wrong with that. I don't know why you fix it, but the idea that, you know, these guys aren't going to go back until the schools are 100% safe. I have this feeling that as this COVID's going to get better and better with the vaccines, and I really believe it will, plus with a lot of people who have already had it, which is the same as a vaccine for most, it's going to start dying out a little bit, and then more and more and more. Schools are never going to be 100% safe, and it's not, no job is 100% safe. I mean, I'm here.
Schools never were, you know, 90% safe.
Yeah.
I mean, if you factor in just the dangers and, you know, the presence of guns and crimes and you know, brawls. It's always been, you know, a place where there's some danger, and I think that there's, you know, there's no way to get rid of all of it, and there's no way to make it a perfect health environment either. There is no such thing. So
I mean, the idea of on the same pivot point, I don't think you should ever force anybody to do anything. I wouldn't want you to force me to be a high scaler at Hoover Dam sitting on a little bench, you know, chipping on rocks all day long, 100-degree heat. But if you say you're going to pay those guys 10 cents more an hour and there's guys that want to do it, that's up to them. You're not going to force me to do it, but I can't say it's too dangerous, I'm going to stay home and send me my check.
Well, that's what's happening.
Yeah, and that's what's happening. I mean, a policeman is dangerous. A garbage truck guy. But I don't. It's probably somewhat dangerous, and it's probably pretty smelly. You know, I mean, hey, I don't like this job. I'm staying home. Send me the check. Well, duh. Name me a, other than maybe being a, I won't even say football player, because you probably feel pretty awful at the end of a game. Other than being like a baseball player or a pro golfer, where you're doing something you probably really do like. Actually, I like trading. So, but I mean, how many people? You think people want to go weld all day? I mean, as opposed to going fishing? That's why they call it work, right?
Well, you know, I'm a union man, Tom. I was president of my local when I taught, and I saw the need for it in lots of situations, and I trusted, you know, the whole relationship that unions have had with administration and collective bargaining. And I mean, I like the whole process very much. I think it's something very civilized about it, and it's got a lot to recommend it. But I became more and more disenchanted with the whole concept of public sector unions, just because, you know, in education, for example, you really have a monopoly pretty much.
Well, and you vote, I mean, you have such a voting power when you start getting that many people. I mean, in California, when you look at I think some of the disparity in pensions and things like that, I actually read that the largest voting bloc were prison guards. Now, I can't believe that that's true. It has to be teachers. But they've got to be one, too. Well, hell, if they're the two largest voting blocks and you need them to get in office, how the hell are you going to go in there and say, I'm cutting your pay? It's not an arm's length transaction anymore at that point.
Right. But not, now they're in a situation where they can't tell them to come into work without getting blowback. So.
Well, but the idea of, the economic, what I'm trying to define here is that if you've got Pullman and you've got the union that works at Pullman, I think it was the steelworkers, what they're fighting over is the share of the company's money. Right?
Right, essentially. And conditions.
And conditions, yeah. But by and large, the place is going to make $100 million if you pay people X, the labor gets $70 million and the other guys get 30, you know, administrative staff and ownership and so forth. If you're basically fighting for the share of the revenue, correct?
Right.
But nobody can demand, you know, 120% of it, and you go and say, well, you got to go raise revenue. So tell your customers they got to pay twice as much when it's a competitive situation. But with a city, you can do that. Oh, we don't have the money, but that's all right. We'll raise taxes. We don't care. Go raise taxes on the other people. There's a third person involved in negotiation. It's not really representative, and that's you and me.
Right. I mean, education is mandated. I mean,
right.
There has to be, you know, a method for educating the public, and unless you want to pay tuition at a private institution, this is what you have, and your tax dollars support it. But as you say, it's just turning on the spigot when it comes to satisfying demands. And there's, you know, the formula has become so repetitive. It's always more money and fewer working hours. And now it's, you know, ideally no working hours in-house anyway. And I think the thing has just become perverted in a grotesque way. And I don't know what you do other than you start have to playing hardball, because the prospect of letting this continue is terrible for students. It's terrible for the families of these students who are tied down by having their kids stuck around the house all day. I mean, what parent isn't really anxious for their kids to get back into school just to free up their own time, too?
Well, Jan, you never want to cut anybody's pay, because people have made plans based on that. You don't want to do anything like that, but you get big disparities in I'll make a comparison to the CPI, which I'm always basically ragging about. You look at over a period of 20 years, I don't care what they were doing, all right? I don't know what happened, but at the end of the day, the CPI, to me, is all bleeped up. And because of three areas that I'll just flip out there at you, it's medical care, higher education, and the fact that you don't include property taxes, which is primary education. Or you don't include them very much. Now, I get the part about men's suits are probably cheaper, at least the crummy ones. Who knows what happened to Nehru jackets? Manny Weber probably owns three. MTVs obviously have come down and that kind of stuff. But you don't buy a TV every day. You know, So what you, I think what you really need is almost an adjustment. You need to say, hey, this thing is up 0.5% in 20 years, but oh, guess what? Medical care is up 300%. So we need to bring the numbers back into focus and say, all right, we need to, and plus we have to say medical care is now 19% of the basket because it's 19% of the economy, not 7%. So there needs to be those kinds of adjustments. And I think I wouldn't want to do this, but if you look at, I was in the Chicago Public Schools. I was a janitor in 1974, for God's sake. And I know what the average person made, okay? And obviously when I got out and I worked for Pullman Places, the average person made, I'm going to say what, 18, 20 grand a year, and a teacher's made 12. Is that probably fair?
Yep, I think that's right.
You know, 16 to 20 versus 12 or 11 or whatever you started out at. Catholic school teachers made all the rice you could eat. I mean, basically. And, so over a period of time, and I'm not saying people that what they were making then was too little, whatever. And I'm not saying teachers aren't important. They sure as hell are. All that stuff. But if you've looked at what's happening, and I pull out the debt clock all the time. The median wage of the rest of the population has gone up 10% in the last 20 years. And I'm going to say the teachers' salaries have, what would you guess, up 75% or have doubled?
Doubled, I'd say probably administrators have even more than doubled.
Right. So my point is it has nothing to do with morals. It has nothing to do with anything. I'm just saying those numbers don't hunt. At some point, you got a problem because the people paying the other people don't have it. The famous Irish line, you can't get blood out of a turnip, right? So, I mean, it just, there needs to almost be a reset. You've had one group of society that's averaged 0.5% a year that are paying for another group that's averaged 4% a year, right? I mean, how does that...
It just feeds the ill will that we have plenty
right.
of already. When it comes to pitting, essential workers against non-essential workers, that to me is just an untold damage to the public spiritedness of trying to get through this mess, because it's made it harder for some people ever to come back, and other people are doing quite well, by having everybody else tamped down. And I think, from a public relations standpoint, I just wish there were a way to squelch some of this craziness that the teachers are kind of locked into now. I mean, they're kind of forced to, keep this drumbeat about, we're not safe. But the more they do it, the more I think they really just instill hatred in other people who don't have this kind of power and don't think anybody should have that kind of power.
Well, this week, I was reading about especially if you have anybody at home who's older and who might be compromised, you shouldn't have to work. Well, you know what? If I'm living at home with my mom and she's got issues, she's on chemo or whatever, which she was for a while, I guess I could stay out of the OEX pit too on the day that everybody in there is hacking away. But that's my call. I mean, it doesn't mean you shut down the OEX pit and you send me a check.
That's right.
I mean, anyway.
We always did function, we're supposed to function on people's individual responsibility and good sense about when not to go out if you were not feeling well and not make all of your colleagues sick, just because you were too selfish, that you didn't want to get docked or, have to take a vacation day or whatever else. You made everybody else in the office sick. That is bad teamwork. But now, I mean, it's just become way beyond that, and you've got the whole economy now staggering because of this.
Well, this whole idea, and you get it, I mean, if you talk to, never in the trading community, okay, it's different because they have a different view of the world and different view of people. Once you move out of it, even people you wonder how the hell they make it through the day don't have any problem telling you, you can't count on other people to have common sense. You got to tell them what to do. And I'm like, well, who the hell are you? Anyway, Jan, and this one I want to lob by Maddie as well. There's a study here. I should have lobbed it out to you guys, and I didn't. Whoever the hell, who's Oxfam? And there was an article here by Holly Elliott, ELLYATT, and it's very well done, Holly. Well, thank you. But I don't agree with some of her conclusions here. Probably because she's young and attractive, and I'm old and grumpy. But anyway, there's 100 1,000 richest people on the planet have already recouped all their losses from the coronavirus pandemic within 9 months. Now, I don't know if I buy that, because some of these people probably own businesses that aren't even back working yet. But I think she's talking about the wealth index has gone up because of the stock market. So she's probably 80% correct. Here's one that I don't buy here, and you guys can. But Oxfam believes it could take more than a decade for the world's poorest to recover from the economic impacts of the pandemic. In a report entitled "The Inequality Virus," the world's 10 richest men have seen their combined wealth increase by $500 billion since the pandemic began. Now, that doesn't surprise me, but the question I want to ask you two guys, you two learned sages, I'm going to say that in my experience, the lower economic people in the I don't care if you put it out 1,000 years, they will never catch up, ever, unless there's like a war or something. That if the stock market totally crashes and all the people lose their money at the top end, there's no way the people on the bottom ever, quote, catch up.
They never catch up to where they just were.
Well, they're never going to catch up to the,
or to any other real benchmark.
Well,
if the
10 richest people now have 10% more than when they started, there's no way on earth it's going to be years and years and years before. So go on another 10 years, they're now going to have double what they started. There's no way that the poorest people are ever going to catch up to those people, ever.
No.
I mean, it's not even on the only way it happened is in, and this is not widely known, but, you know, I haven't seen anything recent, Jan, but I seem to recall in 2000, and a couple other times since then, they said that there was a greater disparity in the top 1% versus the bottom 99. That the record at the time was 1929, when obviously you had the rural area was almost in a depression, and yet the people who had stocks and who had were able to afford a Duesenberg and stuff were just so far ahead of the rest of the world they would never catch up, except for the fact that the stock market went from whatever to like 10% of where it was, and everybody lost money in banks that had money. So it was a great equalizer, nothing that you want to go through again. But right now, the thought of the people who have only, the median income went from 31,000 to 37,000 in the last 20 years, to think that all of a sudden in the next 20 years that you're going to catch up and get up to where the other guys were percentage-wise, God, John, that's the biggest pipe dream I've ever seen. I got a bridge for you.
What's going to make the gain between, 2000 and now look impressive, because it's likely to go up to about 39,000
in
the next 20 years.
Then if you start dropping inflation on top of that, that's why, I think this, what's going on, you don't want the stock market to collapse. You don't want your asset values to collapse. So I think that even though I would have to hold my nose, if I was on the Fed, I'd want to at least maintain. Now, why you feel that you have to drive a market artificially upwards at a time when maybe it shouldn't be, in terms of earnings and other things, that's a whole other story. I mean, you're doing that for individual people. That's a class decision. You know what I'm saying?
It's not fiscal policy or anything like that. It's gravy for people who, it can be steered to.
Well, I mean, if all of a sudden your markets, your liquidity, the fabric of your economy starts to fray. In other words, there's no market for money markets. There's not enough capital. There's not enough money in the system to have a functioning stock market. There's no doubt that that's exactly what the Fed is there for. Okay, and I keep thinking to myself every time I see this guy Fauci. Now that he's landed like a rose here in this thing. For God's sake, John, this is why we paid the guy for 40 years. Is this pandemic, and he blew it. Him and his guys, gang, they should all be fired. I think. I may be a little harsh, but that's what they're there for. And yet every week now they got another story they're telling you. The Fed should be there for just sort of a thing. That's why in 2007 I was ready to fire all of them. Because nobody except them would have all, maybe the Treasury, would have all the information on all the idiots who turned out to be idiots at the time. They were smart and they were way richer than anybody I knew. They were borrowing money in Japan at 2% and and buying mortgage stuff here at 6.5% and scalping the 4.5 on other people's money.
I mean, bad loans.
They didn't care. You're paying, well, the mortgage loans, they were considered guaranteed. You know, they were whatever.
Right, they were loans that never should have been made.
But I mean, if it's your and my money, we concern ourselves with the quality of the loans. If we have $1 million and can go borrow 100, okay, then we're making 4.5% on the 99. We're a little less concerned about the quality than if it was all ours.
Right.
Just saying. So right now, you've got, so I would, that's where the Fed's, job is, okay, when you have a crisis, to inject liquidity to make sure we don't fall apart. They're the banker of last resort. But it's one thing to say, I want a functioning bond market. It's quite another to say, the bond that's worth 100, we're gonna drive it to 120. Because the people who now own these bonds, we want to make sure they're rich. Now, a functioning market, it functions, but you don't determine the price. These guys are determining the price. I mean, under no stretch are the people in Europe that are still at a minus 0.5% interest rate. There's no stretch that regular people, if that's the price of those bonds. The only buddy who either has a policy or is stupid enough to buy them at that price is the central bank.
Right, and it's wealth transfer.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
The number of people who were impoverished to make those people wealthy is the real scandal. And those people don't seem to have any protection. There's nobody looking out for them. And the next crisis that happens, there'll be nobody looking out for them again. So that's the real crime here, I think.
And everybody on the right, and I'll put you on that spot, you and Kevin and the rest of the creatures over there. I won't say lizards, the creatures over there.
I'm a lizard and I'm proud.
I'm proud. And I'm changing my color as we speak. What is it? That's a salamander, right?
Right.
Oh, God. I remember when I was a little kid, my aunt brought me and my cousin two of those things at the circus. I don't know what happened to them, but they changed color a couple times on your blue jeans, but I don't know what happened to them. I'm kind of losing my... But you know what's going to happen? They're going to come back and there's going to be a tax increase. And the tax is going to be on the little guy. But you know what? You never hear on both sides. That's why when the right bitches about the Dems and the left bitches about the Republicans and how they're all a bunch of crooks, there's two things they will never touch. And one is the $3,000 deduction for capital gains for a regular person. The other is, and this is a little-known favorite college rule, that, Maddie, without being too personal, is your mom a big investor?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just say, for instance, that Mama Weber has 10,000 shares of IBM she bought. I don't know if she would. She, I don't think she had that kind of dough when she was 15.
No.
But she bought when she was 15 at, say, $10. Now, IBM was still pretty high. I'm just using it as an example. At $10, and she dies, but I think she's got 40 years left, I hope, but that's fine. She's a great lady. But now, if she gives that to you, Maddie, and you sell it for, say, 200, what do you think your base is?
What do I think my base is?
Yeah, so you sell it at 200. How much money did you make on it?
Well, and it was bought at 10.
Ah, see, now that's where... You're acting like a regular middle-class person. In fact, your base becomes the day you got it from her.
Stepped-up basis, yeah.
It's a stepped-up basis. So if it's 180 the day you get it, and after you know, I'm saying many, many years out, she goes... And you sell it for 200, you only pay tax on 20. So some of the incredible amount of money that's not paid in taxes is stuff that goes in these estates when one leaves it to their kid because they get to step up the basis. So the first 160 is never paid by anybody. And you will never see the left or the right trying to change that thing.
Because that's tax avoidance.
That's tax avoidance.
Tax evasion. So, but you know, Buttigieg in the confirmation hearings the other day let it slip that they were looking at increasing the federal gas tax, and boy, that should shit people up. And they immediately had one of the spokesperson come out and say, oh, no, we're not considering that. And I would say, the hell they aren't.
I'm going to say that you're going to see an increase in gas tax, and there's going to be some way of charging the people who have electric cars.
Right, they'll do it in the name of
you know, supporting the climate agenda or to get on board with our new colleagues when we get
infrastructure
to the Paris Accord or some other ridiculous.
No, it'll be just the infrastructure. We haven't raised a gas tax in 20 years. All these bridges are falling apart. We need more money. And by the way, we're going to make the bridges better and the roads safer. It's easier, better. It's a deal for you.
And you're the clowns using these bridges and roads, so you pay for it. Yeah?
Right. Well, they're going to raise the Social Security tax, and they're going to raise the unemployment tax. So it'll be a very regressive tax increase, and they might throw some bone to the middle class by saying we're going to raise capital gains tax a little bit or something.
Well, that's what the feds will do. Imagine what places like Illinois are going to do.
Well, the property taxes will be, but there, I don't know how much more United can, or but there's another story. I mean, Pritzker figures he's here for 8 years. If he can balance the books, and at the end of 8 years, 500,000 people left the state, he's not going to worry about it. It's the next guy's problem, right?
Yeah, I wonder what his future really is, Tom. I mean, he's taken a much lower profile in the last month or so than he did before. And I get the sense after the failure of the graduated income tax project that he might be licking his wounds and not too sure about where he's headed next. I don't know if he's going to be anything but a one-term governor.
Well, imagine you two guys. By the way, you know, you guys are, well, actually, you have a twin. Maddie's brother is very close. What are you guys? You're apart, maybe?
Yeah, like 16 months or something.
You're almost Irish twins.
Yeah.
So what would happen if say, the Beaudoux became governor and mayor and you wanted to put a law change through and you ponied up like $5 million of your own money and your two brothers picked up another $5 million and were again you on it? like Pritzker's sister. What do you suppose Thanksgiving dinner would be like, Betty? Mom would say, you two guys sit a little on each side of the table so you can start swinging at each other, or what?
A great reality TV show.
That would be a great, I tell you what, that'd be number one in the ratings, that Thanksgiving dinner. I guarantee you the Pritzker Thanksgiving dinner would be number one. If they, can you imagine your sister ponying up even more money that the dad left you both to beat you? And I can't even imagine that, can you?
Oh.
But if it wasn't so tragic, it'd be funny, and it is funny. I'm laughing my ass off her. Anyway, John, talk to you in a bit, buddy. Maybe we'll defy the snow later in the week, and we'll go out and grab an adult beverage.
Yeah, you know, it's coming. So.
Oh, yeah, it's on the way. SP Futures up 150. We'll be right back, Mr. Mike Hart.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as they do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Low to our base, Stocks and Jocks. I'm always Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures now turned a little bit negative. They're minus 2. We're up like 16 last night. NASDAQ futures still up, though, 120. Dow futures down 134. So we kind of split away here. In the Dow, we got the Apple's up 370. Amgen's down 228. We got American Express down a buck. We've got Microsoft up $3. So that's why the stuff in the NASDAQ is up pretty huge. But the rest of the stuff, not so much. Over in Europe, these guys were slightly low before, now they're really low. DAX down 225, 1.6. FTSE down 71 over its 1.1%. CAC down 79, it's 1.5%. So they've dropped almost 1% apiece since we did this an hour ago, which is strange. I'm not really seeing a headline there. Maybe I don't know if you are. Nikkei up 190.7%. Shanghai up 17.5%. Hang Seng up 7.11. 241. Hang Seng's been all over the place and very volatile lately. Bonds down to 1.06 10-year from 1.11. 1 minus 0.54 in Japan, stuck on positive 0.04. Oil down a penny, 52.26. Brent down 2 cents, 55.39. Natural gas up 8 cents, 2.53. RBOB unchanged at 155. Gold up 10 bucks now at 18.66. Silver up 21 cents, 25.77. Copper unchanged at 3.62. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Looks like we're still doing okay on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Storms coming, though, as they say, this afternoon, and that's going to affect your commute home, it sounds like, as that's going to begin at about 4 p.m., a winter weather advisory coming into effect. It's going to last the better part of 24 hours, well into Tuesday afternoon. And we're expecting 5 to 8 inches of snow and high winds, 35 to 40 mile per hour winds as well. So it's going to be a nasty commute home if that starts on time, but certainly it's going to affect tomorrow morning's commute. But today we're off to a good start. No major delays on any of the area expressways, roadways, or tollways. And the only crash in the area right now, it looks like northwest suburbs, Rand Road at Long Grove Road. There is an accident causing delays. Everything else okay out there? Weather today, as I mentioned, cloudy early, a high of 34, and then the snow's rolling in late afternoon, early evening, to the effect of 5 to 8 inches overnight and into Tuesday. Right now, it is overcast and 31 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, storms in the area with a high of 53 today. Their storms, of course, are rain, though, not snow. Right now, it is mostly cloudy and 48 degrees down in Phoenix. In sports, it'll be a Tampa Bay versus Kansas City Super Bowl that will be played in Tampa's home stadium. First time that's ever happened in the Super Bowl, as the Buccaneers upset the Packers in Green Bay 31-26. And the Chiefs came from behind from 9 points down early to blow out Buffalo 38-24. So Chiefs in the Super Bowl back-to-back years, Tampa in the Super Bowl for the first time in about 20 years, and the first time for Tom Brady as quarterback of Tampa Bay. I believe it's his, 11th or 10th Super Bowl appearance, and he's won 6 of them, something like that. Just crazy. In hockey, Blackhawks blew out Detroit 6-2. Coyotes lost to Vegas 1-0. College hoops, Notre Dame took care of Miami on the road 73-59. Loyola beat Bradley 65-56. Chief.
Well, you know, when you think about it, Maddie, it's kind of unusual. It's kind of unusual that, given the way the draft is, all right, where the best players, now granted, you never know who the best players are all the time. When the best players go to the crummiest teams, it wouldn't be all that unusual to have your best quarterbacks not go to a whole lot of Super Bowls. Right? I mean, it is possible.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But some of your best guys just toil at the crummiest teams. And, I mean, Tampa Bay they just didn't get him. They had a big nucleus of people and they went and got some other people, right? I mean,
In football, typically, if you have a great quarterback, your team is going to be good. It doesn't mean you're going to win Super Bowl. I mean, only one team wins it every year.
Right.
But if you have a Russell Wilson or an Aaron Rodgers or a Patrick Mahomes or a Tom Brady over the last 15 years or even, you know, a Philip Rivers type guy at that level, you're pretty much going to make the playoffs every year and have a shot. And they do.
Provided you don't totally screw up the rest of the team. Which
yeah.
Some teams do.
And some teams do.
Like Detroit.
And we've seen, well, Stafford is not at the level of the quarterbacks I just named, but he's okay. But we're seeing it down in Houston with Deshaun Watson, the guy that was drafted in the same class as Mahomes and Trubisky, I'm not saying he's as good as Mahomes, but he's pretty damn close. It just probably a step down from him. And they have nothing around them. In Houston, and he wants out of there. Yeah, I guess that he doesn't like leadership there in that organization, and that'll be interesting. So that is an example. But they made the playoffs last year. They just completely crashed and burned this year. But typically, if you have a great quarterback, you're gonna be right in the thick of it. It's that position you can sort of fill in around it. You still need offensive linemen. You still need receivers. You still need a defense. But if you have a great quarterback, it sort of covers up everything else.
Well, assuming your other people are at least average, but some teams like Detroit aren't even average.
Right, but I would say Stafford is not an elite quarterback.
No, but he's on a scale of 1 to 10. He's not a 4. He's a 6.
Yeah,
and a half.
He's probably a 6.5.
Plus, you never know how good he could be with some tools.
Agreed. Although he's always had great receivers and tight ends. He's just never had a very good offensive line or a very good running game or a very good defense.
Well, you know, what I find interesting about this Kansas City team is that I read years and years ago, and this obviously has been a Bears mantra forever in my mind, and clearly was a Lovie Smith issue, and that if you have a defensive-minded coach, he will never let the offensive coordinator design an offense he can't stop. And from the days when the couple of seasons that I was on this very good touch football team, and I wasn't very good, so I ended up being the backup blocker, backup quarterback, and pretty much the offensive coordinator. and Dr. J and I played. Of course, Dr. J, everybody wanted him because he was really good, and I wasn't. But the interesting part is I did. If you ever want to see people that are imaginative. Go to some of these touch leagues. There's people that would have one quarterback and two. You know, normally you'd have Maddie the center, two blocking backs, your quarterback and three receivers. Right. That's the way your touch would go. Mm-hmm. Right. It's seven people, the way I count.
Yeah.
And but one team had no really good blocking backs, and they had three guys that would be quarterbacks. So they lined up three guys. Back and you center to one to the middle guy, whichever one you rush to, they throw to the other dude and they all went out for passes because they didn't have a big guy to be a blocking back. And it worked. The only difference in touch is you can have two forward passes if one's behind the line. The only difference in rule changes rule, but some teams that had one team had a guy that was like a pro lineman. The guy was solid as all get out because remember what we did to him one day our team. And they had one blocking back. And whichever way this guy, so the two guys rush, and he would go grab the guy on the left and nail him, and then the quarterback would roll left. So by the time the other guy got to him, people were in the pattern, and he was able to complete the pass, right? Or he could run or whatever. And so guys had all kinds of different ways of going about it. And you don't really see a lot of times that imagination in pro. But this thing, what I used to try and do, not at any level at all, sophistication, is the guy at Kansas City, because he's got two great offensive minds on that, is your people that you can't cover. I mean, you have your, tradition is, you have your two incredibly fast receivers, and you put your two incredibly fast deep backs, call them cornerbacks, on those two guys, right? And the people that go out from the middle are either covered a little bit by linebackers and safeties pick them up, or your tight end, who's generally not as fast, and maybe you have a slot, but the slot receiver really didn't start till the mid-80s. You might have backs go out or something, but now the idea is, what if we put our fastest guy in the slot, like every play? And the defense never is going to come around to put a cornerback in there on the guy. But a safety trying to guard this guy, Hill, is like me trying to guard him, right?
Yeah.
And then you have a tight end where you're going to move him around so people can't tie him up at the line. If you have two people of that kind of talent in the middle of the field, assuming your wideouts are good enough to at least occupy a cornerback and just run downfield, how the hell are you going to guard him? And guess what? They can't.
You can't, yeah.
And, I mean, this guy Hill, he just runs through the zone, and he's got three people scratching their head over whose guy is he.
He's incredible.
But, I mean, even if he wasn't, then you could have done the same thing with Hester. I don't know if he was, you know, he patterned as well, but basically, even when the guy doesn't do anything, he screws everything up, right? And when he runs through the middle, he takes a linebacker with him, both safeties go to look for him, and you got this big honking tight end, and nobody messes with it at the line. The guy's wide open every single play.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, but if you put it on the board, you say, okay, let's take our two wideouts. They just run for the end zone every time. Okay, well, guess what? The two cornerbacks got to go with them, and maybe one safety actually has to have a sniff that way to make sure the guy doesn't get away from everybody. So what does that leave in the middle of the field? Not enough people, right?
Yep, that's the idea.
And that is the idea. So somehow or another, you got to get somebody faster covering that Hill guy, even if you probably don't have a guy as fast, and you got to tie up the other guy on the line somehow. That's to have a fighting chance, and then they might go and run on you, you know. But most teams have two and three. You have two receivers that are fast, and that's about it, right? Well, that's how Miami beat the Bears in '85. That's how they beat the 46 defense. They put a guy in the slot that Otis Wilson couldn't cover, and Buddy Ryan would never stop blitzing and put a what are they, the nickel defense in there. He would never change out.
The extra defensive back.
The extra defensive back. So you haven't seen the 46 in 30 years, and that's why, right?
You see it in little spurts, yeah, where a team will do it for a play or maybe a series, but yeah, you don't see it as a base defense anymore at all.
And one of the things, what I would do against these Kansas City guys, I would try that a few plays in a row, with the two linebackers over the top of Kelsey and beat the crap out of him on the way in. That'll slow him up, having a guy have to have, you know, or maybe one guy drop off. And even like what Tony Romo kept saying, don't hit him with your linemen. He says the linemen now are so fast. Let the linemen drop off in coverage, your defensive end, and still rush four people, but not the four they're looking at. They didn't do that once.
Well, no one's been able to devise a defense, except for maybe Oakland. For some reason, Oakland has played, or I guess they're Las Vegas now, has played Kansas City really tough the last few years, and they even beat them once this year. I think that was their only loss with during the regular season with Mahomes at starting quarterback. They seem to have some sort of scheme, which I guess, you know, they play them twice a year. They've seen them a lot, but no one else has been able to slow these guys down at all.
Well, I mean, it was like the I mean, everybody talked about how great the Bulls were, which they were. but the second time through, the second 3 years, I mean, Jordan was not as good as he was the first three, but he certainly was still pretty friggin' good. Scottie Pippen's tremendous, but a lot of teams had one or two really good players. And who was the wild card? It was Tony Kukoc. There's no way.
Yeah, the second three, you had Kukoc and Rodman that were both just
very
dynamic in their own
way.
Rodman, you could go small, and he could guard a center or a four, he was versatile enough to guard the 3-4 or the 5, which was a huge advantage. And then with Kukoc, they were essentially the first team that did what everyone does now, where they would start Longley, but at the end of the game, Longley was usually not out there, and they would basically play five guys that could all switch everything.
Right.
And that's impossible when you have Harper, who is 6'6", Jordan 6'6", Pippen 6'7", And then you had Rodman and Kukoc, who were, you know, 6'8 and 6'11, but were basically wings. And they would just interchange, and they could guard anybody, they could score on anybody, and that was masterful, the way they would do that. And now every team does that.
Well, plus they don't play any defense anymore. I mean, when I say you don't, you really can't, you can't touch anybody, so it's really tough to play defense.
Yeah, I mean, the teams that win it still play defense.
A little bit, more than the other guys. But I mean, there's still an awful lot of uncontested plays per game.
In the regular season, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, not in the postseason.
What, the Bulls seem a little better. What are you thinking?
They're a lot better. I think it's Billy Donovan, I think, is the huge reason, to be honest. I really do.
Well, what players did they get?
Well, they have the same team from last year, and then they added, their draft pick, Patrick Williams, who looks like he might be a good player, but he's only 19, so yeah. he's been up and down. He's had some really good games, and then he's had some games where he hasn't done much, as you would expect from a 19-year-old. But everyone else is the same.
Everybody was hurt. I can't even tell what last year was about.
They had some injuries last year, and they've had some injuries this year. Markkanen's already missed some games. Carter's missed some games. Otto Porter's missed some games.
But he's helped out a lot.
But I saw a stat, going into Saturday's game against the Lakers, which they did not play well, but Lakers are really good. Across the board on offensive categories, they were last year ranked between, you know, 27th and 30th as, you know, literally the worst offensive team in basketball. This year, with the exact same guys, they're ranked anywhere between 4th and 10th in every offensive category. And they're just scoring, they're just playing within a system that is really putting guys in positions to be, you know, to be successful. And you're seeing guys like Kobe White being really good and Markkanen being good again after they ran Markkanen into the ground to the point where he looked like he didn't even want to be there last year.
Yeah.
And now he looks like Markkanen again. He's getting, you know, when he's playing, he's still had some injury issues that he's got to get over, but when he's out there, he's scoring 20 points a game. LaVine is a great NBA scorer, top five scorer in the league. And, now they can score with anyone. So if they figure out how to play some level of defense, I mean, they could actually be a 7 or an 8 seed in the East this year, which is crazy.
Well, I would always, when I played, it was always a bunch of slow white guys. You know, see, you essentially had to play some kind of team basketball or you couldn't beat anybody, right? I watched them the other night and the amount of times on both teams, but mostly the Bulls, the amount of times somebody will come down. It's one thing I'm not going to say Michael Jordan because nobody's Michael Jordan, but if you take the ball down and you decide you go one-on-one with somebody because you have an advantage or whatever, and you're down at the 10 or 15-foot area or you post somebody up, there's other people around you. This idea where you go down and you take this three-point shot and if you miss, there's three guys from the other team standing under the basket waiting for the ball, none of your people. That's just, I would never throw up a shot if I didn't think anybody was anywhere remotely close than my team to get the rebound. I mean, you would never, you know, unless it was a breakaway of some kind, you would never just go down there and my team's not here yet, I'll wing one up from the next county, knowing full well that even if I'm a 30% shooter, there's 70% chance the other guys are going to get the ball because I have no chance at the rebound. That's just bad basketball, man.
It is. I agree.
And I'm going to say
you have to limit those dumb possessions.
But that's 4 out of 10 times I was watching the other night.
Well, the other night was their worst game of the year, so I wouldn't judge the whole season on that.
But I'm going to see the other team do it. I mean, you'll see times where guys will launch one of the only people standing around underneath there, three people on the other team.
Yeah, those are not good shots, and I watch a lot of basketball. I enjoy high school, college, pro, all of it. Every team, good teams, middle teams, bad teams, take a percentage of bad shots every game. And I don't know why, but they just do. And that's when the coach gets pissed and usually takes the guy out.
Yeah, that's a...
But it's just, you feel good, you feel like you have an advantage, or maybe you hit one the time down before, and so you let one fly, or maybe you're frustrated because you made a bad defensive play, so you're trying to make up for it. And you just see it. Guys take bad shots sometimes. But the really good teams take a lot less bad shots.
Well, to get back to the politics a little bit, because just you and me, politics/markets. I don't want to see, and I think I am seeing, I think the Democrats are overplaying their hand. And the last thing I want to see is some monster flipping 2 years where it goes back all the other way, what the other guy's feeling now, they got to come back and have, you know, 100 executive orders reversed than what the guy before did. I don't see how the hell we can do that, man. Every 4 years, have a, you know, a million, Congress doesn't do what they're supposed to do. So we got all these executive orders. The next guy comes in, the first day all he does is say, the other guys are no good, here's mine. I mean, that is not the way we're supposed to be doing business here. I mean, I think these guys need to stop. They need to, we need some people, and it's not Nancy or Chuck, that just want to do government here and realize the pickle we're in, because I think we're in a huge pickle. I mean, economically, socially, all kinds of ways, and somebody has to turn this bus around, because China seems to me to be getting stronger. Russia's laughing at us. I mean, I don't, this economic disparity is, an inequality is, it's always going to be somewhat, but it's reached the point where it's not at all healthy, I don't think. I mean, people have to be able to earn a living at some real jobs, and it shouldn't just be that the people up top make all the money. So we have to do something with the supply and the demand. We've got to figure out what we're doing as college education money, because you should be able to get an education for less than let's put it this way. I like to look at things that are relative, and I was talking earlier about salaries of teachers versus other people. Well, I mean, when I went to Notre Dame in 70, well, I graduated in 74, I'm going to say somebody who worked at Pullman, I don't know if those guys made $20 an hour. I don't think they did. I'm going to say they made 18. So say you made 18 grand a year plus some overtime. So say you could make 22, right? And we're talking about welders or, you know, joiners, which is the real term for carpenters, those kinds of people. The ladies that work in the wire room, they all made the same amount. Okay, so they made, say you made 20. Well, Notre Dame education, all in, books, room and board and everything, was essentially somewhere between 15 and 20% of a person's salary per year. And now the same person's making 37 and the Notre Dame education 75. Now how the hell on a relative scale is a college education for one student worth 2 years' pay? How is that even remotely possible? It's not at all.
Of course not.
And so, I mean, I don't know how you fix stuff like that. It's not a question of getting rid of student loans. It's not a question. The price is too friggin' high. Let's not talk about, I mean, there's ways to fix the student loan thing. I mean, I have my way to fix it. I mean, the last thing you want to do is, I think, avoid the moral hazard, which you don't seem to care about with rich people, but with poor people, we always care about a moral hazard. What I would do is I would say, look, the interest rates we've made for everybody else in the last, we're pushing 12 years, right? Since 2007, maybe more than that, 2008. That the interest rate for these people has been on average 6.5. You know, if we had the money, which we don't, as a federal, instead of telling people they don't have, you know, that we're going to pay their loan off, why don't we say, even the people who did pay their loan off, guys like you, we say we're going to go back 10 years and we're going to rebate everybody 1.5% of the interest they paid. Or even you would get a check when you paid it off. And we're going to say for people who are like on disability and all the other stuff, they get to discharge these loans through bankruptcy. Why can't you? I mean, why all of a sudden is that the only loan on earth that can't avail itself bankruptcy? If you can't, there's no hope of you ever paying it back. What's the point? I mean, there's things we can do here, I think, if we use our head. And yet we can't. We don't have to have this big, you know, Bernie Sanders. We're gonna, you know, get rid of. We're gonna put transactions tax on PTI securities, and we're gonna get rid of everybody's student loans. Gee, really? Do we pay? Is there that much money here at PTI? I wish I could find it. I mean, we don't need bombastic crap like that. Let's just come out with some programs that make sense and push them through. Right? I mean, we got to find a way to not give the colleges this money. Because all it does is raise the tuition price, right? I mean, people economically, if you end up giving everybody in the soybean world, you know, a bunch of dough, all you do is raise the price of soybean. I mean, you don't get anywhere by doing that, I don't think. So I mean, I don't want these idiots spending the next 3 months worrying about whether Trump can run again when the guy's damn near, what is he, 75? I mean,
something like that.
I mean, I don't want him worried about Hillary running again. I hope nature takes care of it. I mean, what was
he turned 75 in June.
Yeah. So I mean, I would hope that the people won't elect the guy again. I mean,
I don't have an opinion either way on the impeachment thing. I don't really care. They could drop it tomorrow, and I wouldn't care. They could go through with it, and I wouldn't care. I don't know if he's going to get convicted anyway, or I doubt that'll happen anyway. That's not really, like I said, I don't really care, but I see both sides of it. It doesn't really matter to me. But what is interesting, to your greater point, is that, you know, you really notice it with the Supreme Court stuff. These both sides really overplay their hands, and it just keeps pushing it further and further away from anything that makes sense. When you have, you know, like the Merrick Garland thing a few years ago, the Republicans block, can't let him in, and then they completely do the opposite here, and Democrats do the same thing, you know, Hillary and now with Trump, and it's like, if they don't, then what? They lost because they did it to them before or something? I don't know what the mindset is, but it's clear they're just gonna keep going down this road, and be as vindictive as possible. And not realizing that the political wind will change again in 2 years, and they'll be on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that. I mean, I would hope that when you go to the playground and play basketball, the reason why you don't slug somebody on a layup, A, because it's not the right thing to do, you would hope, but you also know that if you did it, you're going to get it the next time. Which, you know, so you don't want everybody playing that way. I mean, so you should be above the fray, but even if you're not, you should realize that it's just going to happen to me. You know, what goes around comes around. Well, your buddy Ed Norton, Matty, you got to be nice to people coming out of the sewer because you meet the same people going back down, right?
That's right. That's exactly right.
S&P futures up 250. NASDAQ futures up 123. Dow futures, however, down over 100 points. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.